Imagine building a skyscraper, but instead of one architect calling the shots, everybody gets a say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a little chaotic, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what modern software development feels like sometimes. But thankfully, you brought this great book, Facilitating Software Architecture,
yeah,
by Andrew Harmelaw. It's all about making smart architectural decisions when things are, well, decentralized.
It is. And you know what? It's fascinating how much this book speaks to this huge shift we're seeing. You know, the lone architect, that top-down approach, it's fading fast, and it's changing everything.
So let's break it down. The book talks about these, what does it call them? Five revolutions, I think,
right,
that have really shaken things up. What are they exactly, and why are they so important to software architecture as a whole?
Okay, so the five revolutions are agile development, the rise of cloud computing, that whole DevOps movement, the big focus on product thinking, and the shift towards stream-aligned teams. Each one has brought about its own changes, but together, they've really, I mean, fundamentally changed software development. We're moving away from that centralized control.
Okay.
You know, more towards a decentralized collaborative model.
So we're moving away from that skyscraper with one architect and more towards a bustling city where everyone has input. But how does that impact software architecture specifically?
Well, that's the big question. Traditional top-down architecture, it just doesn't work in this new world. You've got multiple teams all working independently.
Right.
They're making their own decisions. Having one person dictating the design, it creates a bottleneck. It really stifles innovation, slows down development, and can even, you know, lead to less effective software.
So too much control actually makes things worse. That's kind of counterintuitive.
It is, and that's precisely why this book is so important. It gives us a framework. A framework for making those architectural decisions in a decentralized world, one that embraces collaboration and empowers teams to make those choices.
So that framework, that's what the book calls the architecture advice process.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Sounds a bit like group therapy for software development, if you ask me.
You know, in a way it is. That core idea, it's shifting from giving orders to seeking advice. Anyone can propose an architectural decision,
okay,
but they have to seek input from, well, everyone who's going to be impacted this way. Everyone has a voice, and those decisions are made with a shared understanding.
So instead of having one person decide everything, we're going for a more collaborative process. But how do we ensure that this process actually works?
Yeah.
What's to stop it from becoming just a bunch of endless meetings, you know?
That's where things get interesting. The book outlines some really crucial elements that support this advice process. One of the most important is architectural decision records, or ADRs.
ADRs. Tell me more.
Yeah. So ADRs are basically a written record of every architectural decision.
Oh, okay.
They document not just the decision itself, but the context, the reasoning behind it, and even the other solutions that were considered. They're like a single source of truth.
Right. For the architecture. And they help to ensure transparency and accountability.
That's brilliant. Having that documented history, it can be so valuable. You know, new team members, or when you're trying to remember why a certain decision was made. Months, maybe even years down the line. It's like having a map of how the architecture evolved. But ADRs are just one piece of the puzzle, right? The book mentions other supporting elements as well.
Absolutely. ADRs are a strong foundation, but there are other elements that help the process thrive. The book highlights things like architecture advice forums. These are regular meetings, but specifically for open discussion and advice giving.
So creating a dedicated space for those conversations helps ensure they actually happen and that everyone feels comfortable sharing their thoughts.
Precisely. And then you have testable cross-functional requirements, what we call CFRs. They're basically clear guidelines, measurable guidelines, that make sure different parts of the system are working together smoothly. I remember the book using an example requiring all system responses to be under 500 milliseconds.
Yeah.
Forces teams to think about performance from the beginning.
Right.
And to actually work together to meet those requirements. It's not just about building your own little component. It's about making sure it all works together.
You got it. And that focus on the big picture is so crucial in this new world of decentralized software development. And to help keep that big picture in mind, you know, focused, the book also talks about a shared technology strategy. But this isn't about dictating which specific tech to use. It's more about those guiding principles for how technology is used within the organization.
So less, you must use this database, and more guidelines for when certain technologies are the right fit.
Exactly. It's about a shared understanding, you know, of the organization's tech landscape, making sure those decisions align with the overall strategy. And along with that, there's also the idea of collectively sourced architectural principles.
Collectively sourced. So these aren't just coming from, you know, up high.
Right. These principles, they're developed collaboratively. Everyone's involved. Developers, architects, even business people.
Wow.
The book actually describes this really cool workshop format. It's for brainstorming and refining those principles, making sure they reflect the shared values of the whole organization.
So it sounds like these principles act as a guide for architectural decisions,
mm-hmm.
you know, helping teams navigate tricky situations and stay aligned with the big goals, kind of like a shared compass everyone can use.
That's a great way to put it. And then to complete the toolkit, the book introduces this concept of a technology radar.
A technology radar. That sounds interesting.
Think of it as like a weather map, but for the tech world.
Okay.
It's a visual tool. Teens can track and share insights about new technologies.
Okay.
Categorizing them based on how mature they are and their potential impact.
So it's a way to stay ahead of the curve, find those promising new technologies, and see what risks or opportunities they might bring.
Exactly. Being proactive, not reactive. And it's a big part of managing variability.
Ah, variability. The book talks about that a lot. Why is it such a big deal when it comes to software architecture?
Well, variability is essentially anything that can change or that's unknown, you know, during development.
Okay.
Could be user needs changing, new tech popping up, unexpected technical challenges, anything that brings in uncertainty.
And in the past, we often just tried to ignore it, pretend it didn't exist. But this book, it takes a different approach, right?
It does. It argues that we need to embrace variability.
Okay.
Accept that it's just part of software development and mm-hmm. build those systems that can adapt. That's where things like spikes come in.
Spikes. They sound a little dangerous.
Actually, it's the opposite. Spikes are these short, focused experiments. You use them to test out different approaches or gather information before making a decision.
So kind of like dipping your toe in the water before jumping all the way in?
Exactly. It's all about reducing that uncertainty and making informed decisions, you know, when there's variability. The book also talks about breaking down those big, complex decisions into smaller, more manageable chunks.
Right.
You get faster feedback, and it's easier to adapt when things change.
So it's like that old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Tackling a huge problem all at once, that can be pretty overwhelming, but breaking it down makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. And that applies to software architecture, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all these tools and techniques are great, but there's another really important piece.
The con side of things.
You got it. Can't just focus on processes and tools. We have to consider the people involved, too.
Because in the end, software is built by people, and how well any approach works really depends on how well it supports those people, right?
Exactly. And one of the key things this book brings up is that leadership, well, it doesn't have to be tied to a job title.
Wait, so anyone can be a leader?
That's the idea. Anyone who sees a need and takes that initiative, helps guide the team toward a solution, they can be a leader. It's all about empowering people to do their best and make a difference.
That's a pretty powerful concept. It's not about, you know, hierarchy or who has the authority. It's about shared responsibility, collective ownership.
Right. And to encourage this kind of environment, the book talks about these advice process bubbles.
Advice process bubbles. What are those?
They're basically dedicated spaces, you know, like a safe space. Teams can practice the advice process without being held back by, like, the wider organization's hierarchy or all that bureaucracy.
So it's like giving them their own little sandbox,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To experiment and try things out, see what works for them.
Exactly. Creating that safe environment for learning and experimentation, trying things out, making mistakes, and learning from those experiences.
But these bubbles aren't meant to be totally isolated, are they?
Of course not. The book stresses how important communication and collaboration are between those bubbles. It's about finding that balance between autonomy and alignment. Think of it like a jazz band.
Okay.
Each musician, they've got the freedom to improvise, but they're still playing within that shared structure, that rhythm.
It's like we're shifting from, you know, a symphony orchestra where everyone plays exactly what's written to a jazz band where there's room for expression, but still within that structure. That's a great analogy. But this kind of shift, it's not going to be easy, right?
No, you're absolutely right. It's a big change, a real shift in mindset for individuals, for organizations.
Yeah.
There are going to be challenges, bumps in the road, you know, a learning curve as teams adjust.
Like what kinds of challenges?
Yeah.
What should people, you know, be ready for?
Well, one common one is resistance to change. Letting go of that control, it can be hard, especially for people who are used to being in charge. There might be pushback from, well, those who are used to making decisions on their own. Or from organizations that are just, you know, stuck in those old hierarchical ways.
And even if people are open to it, they're still learning how to do things differently, learning how to give and receive advice, you know, documenting decisions effectively, working with all that variability.
Exactly. It's a journey, not a destination. And the book acknowledges that. It doesn't give you a quick fix. It gives you that framework for continuous learning, you know, improvement, encourages teams to experiment, iterate, adapt as they go.
So it's about embracing the messiness, knowing there will be stumbles, but trusting that this new way of working will lead to better results in the end.
That's it. It's about having faith in the process, in the people. Mm. And speaking of people, there's one last thing we need to talk about. It's crucial for this advice process, the human element.
We talked about leadership and teamwork, but what do you mean by the human element?
It's about fostering that culture of trust, psychological safety, continuous learning. It's about people feeling comfortable speaking up, sharing their ideas, even if they're not, you know, fully formed.
Right.
It's about valuing different perspectives, understanding that the best solutions often come from those, well, healthy debates.
So it's about moving away from those arguments where you're trying to prove someone wrong.
Yes.
And going towards a more collaborative way of solving problems together.
That's it. The book calls it coalescent argumentation. Engaging in, you know, respectful dialogue, listening, working together to find that common ground.
So it's not about winning the argument. It's about building on each other's ideas
right.
and creating a stronger solution.
Precisely. And for that to work, you need trust. Psychological safety. Wow. People need to feel safe, sharing, you know, even if they're wrong, without being judged.
It's about making it okay to make mistakes, as long as we learn from them. And that takes a different kind of leadership, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Leaders, they need to set that tone, model those behaviors, seek out those different perspectives, be open to being challenged, and create that space where it's safe to, well, fail and learn.
It's about moving from, you know, a culture of blame to a culture of learning and recognizing that building great software, it's a team effort.
Exactly. And the advice process, with all its pieces and principles, is there to empower that team, use that collective intelligence, the creativity, and build software that really works in this, well, complex and changing world.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, think about how this advice process can change the way you work. Could it help you make better decisions, have stronger relationships, and build software that really meets those users' needs?
Remember, the advice process, it's more than just techniques. It's a mindset shift. It's about embracing collaboration, valuing those differences, and empowering people. And it's a journey worth taking.